The Dharma, incomparably profound and exquisite, is rarely met with even in hundreds of thousands of millions of kalpas. We now can see it, hear it, accept it, hold it. May we realize the true mind of the Tathagata. Today is day one of the 7-day Sesshin here at Turtleback Zendo in Lawrenceville, New Jersey. On a crazy winter spring day, up and down the temperatures, just like all over the country right now with global warming. And I'd like to share with you something of the words of a Chinese master of the Tang era, whose name in Japanese is pronounced Hyakujo Ikkai. Huihai was his Chinese name. If you recall, the Chinese characters were also the written language in Japan. Both written languages have diverged since then, but at one point they were identical, which made it possible for Chinese masters to come to Japan and teach Japanese monks, and for Japanese monks to go to China and train under Chinese masters. Even though the pronunciation was different, the characters, the written language was identical back then. And among the notable people that went to train in China was Dogen Kigen, who had initially been training in Japan, in Kyoto actually, and eventually went with his teacher to China to continue training there, and he stayed on after his teacher died in China and had a deep awakening experience. This is all chronicled in the documentary called Zen, which is in Japanese and is actually quite an inspirational and excellent documentary. And I think it is available on Amazon.com, and it's worth seeing. As a matter of fact, after we had seen it at Mountain Gate, I took the DVD to California where we were having a weekend sesshin, and it was so inspiring, this DVD, that instead of the opening night regular program, we watched this 2-hour long documentary instead, because as someone had said at Mountain Gate, wow, it makes you want to sit. So of course Dogen was a very vital person in our history in Zen, but of course also so were the Chinese masters. And Hyakujo was a master during the famous golden age of Zen, Tang era, which in a certain way bears some resemblance to our era right now. The Tang era, as well as some of the earlier eras in Chinese history, was notable for the persecutions of Buddhists. And it was in large part because of Hyakujo's rules for monks that included a day without work as a day without eating, and having to do manual labor, farming, just basically support themselves, allowed the Zen sect to survive in China despite those pogroms. Hyakujo was the teacher of Obaku, and that's of course also his Japanese pronunciation. And Obaku was the teacher of Rinzai, who's another very important person in our lineages here. Rinzai was famous for his shouts. And when somebody asked a question, he would give a great shout, which basically shocked the person into a mind state that was beyond words. And he had a great deal of success in bringing people to awakening in that way. And to this day, then, he is famous for his shouts. But Hyakujo and Obaku and Rinzai and the lineages that followed and also preceded these very famous men were filled with men and women who were deeply awakened. Deeply awakened and passing their understanding down the lines through their students to the point where today we have a viable Rinzai sect. The Soto sect has kind of gone a different direction since Dogen, but Rinzai is still quite viable and demands personal experience of our true nature. And this is vital for Buddhism to continue to be alive and vibrant and able to pass along the teachings in an appropriate and authentic way. People have to have had the same experience as these great masters who had the same experience as the Buddha. And this is why we sit in the Zendo today, to deepen, to open, to eventually as well have that same experience, which is tremendously freeing. And of course, it's not just freeing for ourselves, it's freeing for infinite life, and as well, we do it not just for ourselves, really not for ourselves, but for all beings. This is the Bodhisattva vow, to come to awakening for the benefit of all beings, not for our own personal self-satisfaction, as Arada Shoto Roshi speaks of. It is that we are able to be there for all beings, especially those who are in pain and suffering, because as we ourselves are able to open to the way beyond suffering, and this is not the way beyond suffering through dissociation, this is the way beyond suffering through transcendent mind states, so that even in the midst of suffering, we are free. We are able to function fully, even if, like Jacques Le Saron, we are in a prison camp, potentially to be annihilated. And of course, nowadays, we don't know what's going to happen. The political scene is so quixotic, and seems to be increasingly characterized by secrecy and things happening behind the scenes, that it's a little bit sobering to consider. I was just reading today that the Republican committee, the Republican-headed committee that is supposedly working on a substitute for Obamacare, the Health Care Act that has allowed so many more people access to health care, that the people who are most in charge, the Republicans who are most in charge of that committee, are refusing to allow anyone access. Even other people on the committee who are of the Democratic persuasion, and even in some cases some of their more liberal Republican committee members as well, they are refusing access to any documentation, any information about how they're working on some form of substitute health care act. This is not the stuff of free America. This is the stuff of of countries that are trying to work in a very different way without the transparency available to their people. This is not a good sign. And that kind of thing was happening in China as well, with all these different political movements that were creating havoc. And on top of that, there was banditry and all manner of other challenges for people in daily life. It was not an easy time to live. In a certain way, ours is easier, but on the other hand, this is a very dangerous time for American political freedom. The good news is that more and more people are becoming active who never would have become active in politics as a result. And both sides of the coin, both the conservatives and the liberals, and it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. At any rate, I'd like to share with you some of the teachings of Hyakujo from a book called The Enlightened Mind, an anthology of sacred prose edited by Stephen Mitchell. This is in a speech to the assembly. Back in that era, there wasn't the formal setup that there is now in monasteries or temples, Zen temples. And for example, there was not sanzen or doksan. If a teacher was out and about among the monks, and often in those days there were hundreds, literally hundreds of monks. Not only hundreds of monks, but also hundreds of lay people working to help support these temples, and even, oddly enough, some of these monks owned slaves. It's a pretty curious cultural situation. At any rate, the master would come out and about, and there was an opportunity when he was for anybody to ask a question. And that became the teaching arena. And sometimes he would go to the halls where the monks were living and give a talk. And this is what is meant by a speech to the assembly, the assembly of monks. And because he's talking to men, he is using male pronouns. Friends and brothers, it is all right for you to be monks, but it is much better to be men unattached to all things. Why should you run around making karma that will hem you in like a criminal's chains, trying to empty your minds, straining to attain enlightenment, blabbering about your understanding of the Buddha and Dharma? All this is a waste of energy. Once the great Matsu, that's Basso Dotsu, said to me, "Your own treasure house already contains everything you need. Why don't you use it freely instead of chasing after something outside yourself?" From that day on, I stopped looking elsewhere. Just make use of your own treasure house according to your needs, and you will be happy men. There isn't a single thing that can be grasped or rejected. When you stop thinking that things have a past or a future, and that they come or go, then in the whole universe there won't be a single atom that is not your own treasure. All you have to do is look into your own mind. Then the marvelous reality will manifest itself at all times. Don't search for the truth with your intellect. Don't search at all. The nature of the mind is intrinsically pure. Thus, the Flower Garland Sutra says, all things have neither a beginning nor an end. For those who are able to interpret these words correctly, the Buddhas are always present. Furthermore, the Vimalakirti Sutra says, reality is perceived through your own body. If you don't run around after sounds and sights or let appearances give rise to conceptual thinking, you will become men unattached to all things. That's enough for now. Take good care of yourselves. go through that again. Some comments. Friends and brothers, it is all right for you to be monks, but it is much better to be men unattached to all things. People come into the monastery, people come into Sesshin, people go into the temples with an agenda, attached, at the very least, to a self-image. I'm this way, I'm that way. And it feels permanent and fixed. I'm unworthy is a very common one. And even people who have big egos underneath, it's usually an unworthiness that makes them act otherwise. Someone commented to Kepler, she once a long time ago, about, I think they were complaining about somebody else at the Rochester Zen Center. And Roshi said, you know, everybody thinks that people who come to Zen practice, particularly people who live in a monastery or a Zen center, are all these enlightened, lovely, peaceful people. But the reality is that we all come in with our stuff. And some of us are anything but enlightened and peaceful. At the same time, we're like rocks in a tumbler, banging into each other. We polish ourselves and polish each other. And this is of great benefit. Underneath all of this, we are perfect, whole, and complete. And it's vital to realize that. We may halfway accept it intellectually, but deep down in our belly, we have a resistance to accepting that because of our conditioning. We assume so much as a result of how we grew up, the experiences we had, the reactions people had to us, reactions we've had to other people. And we develop this very pervasive, very intense, very strong, very fixed image of ourselves, which we assume is who we are. And yet that's not at all who we are. That's a paper story. That's a mirage. That's a bunch of conclusions drawn. And it's very interesting. Some of the major conclusions of this sort are well known in psychology. For example, children whose parents divorce almost universally assume that it's because they're bad. They themselves are bad, that if they were just better behaved, mommy and daddy would have stayed together, that it's their fault. And then there are further conclusions. If they're boys and mommy and daddy split and the boys stay with mom, they're not sure whether mom's not going to leave them too. She left dad. Maybe she'll leave me too. Or if they're girls and mom and dad separate and the girls stay with mom still, what's wrong with me that daddy doesn't like me anymore? And yet, this is not the truth. The truth is that mommy and daddy had their issues, and that's why they split up. It's extremely rare that a child is a trigger for these issues. And really, in all the years that I have been around in this particular life, I've only known of one situation, although there probably are more that I just don't know about, where a couple split up because of the child. And in this case, this was a child who was born normal child in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and this is a little boy, and when he began to be 2.5, 3 years old, his development reversed itself. He had been an active, vocal little kid running around, and gradually it's almost as if the plug was pulled and all these different abilities, speech, being able to move and run and do things, went backwards. It was a rare genetic condition that was the source of this, and it was also, it turned out to be the source of some challenge in the family, and so the parents split up. That again is not 100% because of the kid. That is, the child was a trigger in activating the parents' issues, and they were unable to overcome these issues and stay together, and so this the family split up. And it was the mother and the grandmother that remained taking care of this little boy who continued to deteriorate until he was 17, and finally he died at 17. But before that, this child was sunshine personified. I know this because a good friend of mine, who's a nurse, was interacting with the family, with the mom and the grandmother, and helping to take care of the boy, who never grew to normal size, needless to say, and was no longer able to speak or feed himself or eat. However, he was radiant, absolutely radiant. We get these ideas about ourselves. Things happen and we draw conclusions. This is normal in a certain way for human beings, because we try to make sense of what's going on in order to wend our way through with the least amount of pain and suffering. Although, ironically, we cause ourselves a lot more pain and suffering as a result of the conclusions we draw so often, particularly that it's our fault, that something's wrong with us, that we're someone who can't ever do anything right, that nobody ever loves us, and so on and so forth. And it is so common. It is so common. This is why psychologists have such long hours these days, serving people who are in pain and suffering because of the conclusions that they have drawn about themselves as a result of the experiences they've had. Now, of course, that's not the whole story, because there is authentic trauma that, of course, again, some of that results in a self-image that needs to be worked with in order for the trauma to be released. And then there is post-traumatic stress syndrome from people being in seriously life-threatening circumstances such as war or other domestic circumstances that are violent and life-threatening. But in general, we have come up with this idea of ourselves, and it is causing us all manner of suffering. And yet, who we are, even in the midst of our history, who we are is still perfect, lacking nothing. Free to be able to love and be loved. Free to be able to be utterly clear and let go. And it is through our practice that we reach that point of becoming clear and let go, so that we can see who we really are. continue with Yakujo. Trying to empty your minds, straining to attain enlightenment, blabbering about your understanding of the Buddha Dharma, all this is a waste of energy. When really, the issue is to let go of that self-image enough to be able to see who you really are. This is why concentration is so important. Because if we concentrate, whether it's on a koan, whether it's on the extended out-breath, we have to let other mind involvements go. And in letting everything else go, we can open to the truth. We can open to reality. In another part of this book, let's see where it is here, who said it? This is actually Muhammad said this. True religion is surrender. True religion is surrender. And that's what we're called upon to do. To surrender our ideas, our assumptions, our thoughts. To let all of it go and open to possibility. Huihai says, don't search. Rather, we would say, open to possibility. Allow yourself to surrender to the moment as it appears to be. And surrender means not getting involved with any ideas about it. But being so totally present, the possibility opens up wide. And you may catch a glimpse of the real truth. Once the great Matsu said to me, your own treasure house already contains everything you need. Why don't you use it freely instead of chasing after something outside yourself? Let go the thoughts. Don't push them away. Let them go. Let them float away. What's beneath them? Open to that possibility. There's no point in engaging in thoughts. There's no point in engaging in ideas. Sit deeply still and open to possibility. From that day on, I stopped looking elsewhere. Just make use of your own treasure house according to your needs, and you will be happy men. There isn't a single thing that can be grasped or rejected, much less this self-image. When you stop thinking that things have a past or future, and that they come or go, then in the whole universe there won't be a single atom that's not your own treasure. All you have to do is look into your own mind. Then the marvelous reality will manifest itself at all times. Don't search for the truth with your intellect. Don't search at all. The nature of the mind is intrinsically pure. Thus the flower garland says, all things have neither a beginning nor an end. For those who are able to interpret these words correctly, the Buddhas are always present. Furthermore, the Vimalakirti Sutra says, reality is perceived through your own body. If you don't run after sounds and sights or let appearances give rise to conceptual thinking, you will become men unattached to all things. That's enough for now. Take good care of yourself. That's pretty clear. Thank you for listening. We'll stop now and recite the four vows.